All right, we are going to be going over the last chapter of the book of Acts this evening. And so the process is we'll be continuing as he travels along on his journey to Rome. As he gets into Malta, we'll talk a little bit about some of the actions that he had on the island there and as he travels on to Rome. From a summary standpoint, if we go back and reminder, how did Paul get to where he's at? Well, remember, he was a prisoner in Jerusalem, and he was brought before Festus, and Festus wanted to send him back to Jerusalem, but Paul had told Festus that, you know, I've done nothing wrong against really the Romans or the Jews, so really there's no reason for me to be tried at all. And Festus pretty much agreed to him, but he wanted to send him back to Jerusalem, and then Paul appeals to Caesar, as was his right as a Roman citizen. And next chapter, King Agrippa comes in, and of course Festus has a challenge because he's going to be sending him to Rome, but he really doesn't have anything to charge him with. So King Agrippa comes on the scene, and he goes, "Hey, why don't you listen to this and maybe help me come up with something that we can write down as we send Paul up there?" And so Paul defends himself before Agrippa and talks about really what he had done as a Jew and the actions that he had perpetrated against Christians. And yet he talks about the conversion that he went through, and he challenges Agrippa, really. He says, "Agrippa, I know that you are knowledgeable of the prophets. Do you believe?" And what does Agrippa do? "Man, you know what? You almost are persuading me to be a Christian." And Paul goes, "Man, I wish you would, and I wish everyone here would become just as I am, except for these chains." And then he is sent on his way to Rome. So we see here the map of the trip to Rome. We're going to cover just a little bit of a summary of what Brother Craig talked about on Sunday. When we started out, you know, they drop off at Sidon. He's given into the custody of a centurion named Julius, and their first stop is Sidon. And it seems like that, you know, Paul had already made an impact on this centurion, whether he was part of the exposure while Paul was giving his defense, not really sure. But it seems like that he was aware that there was no charges against Paul or whatever. And so he allows Paul to kind of have a little bit of freedom while he's there. And they get a ship from Adriamitium, and then they go to Myra, and now he's looking for a ship from, and the centurion finds a ship from Alexandria. And so you think about this, and we think, oh, it's how they're just traveling or whatever. So now there's a lot of logistics going on. You know, we sit here and we travel today, and it's a little bit easy. We want to go to destination B, and we get by a ticket, and we've already got our destinations. But they had to go, and then they had to find another ship. So typically ships would have trade routes. So the ship that they got out of Caesarea was not going to go all the way to Rome. And so finding this ship from Alexandria, they got on board and started traveling. And they're going to go along the coast of Asia, and they get to Cnidus, and the weather, you know, hinders them from going on, and it pushes them more toward the island of Crete, and they end up in Fair Havens, and it says that they're there for many days. And Paul states in chapter 27, verse 10, "Men, I perceive that this voyage will end with disaster and much loss, not only of the cargo and ship, but also our lives." So let's look at the relationship between the centurion and Paul. Now, we already know that the centurion had given him a little bit of liberty when he was at Sidon, and yet he listens. He's more persuaded by the helmsman and the owner of the ship than the things spoken by Paul. So remember that, because a little bit later on, we're going to see where the centurion kind of changes his attitude about listening to Paul. But you, from the centurion standpoint, I mean, Paul's a prisoner. He's got to get to Rome. He's not the owner of the ship. He's not the pilot, the helmsman, or whatever. So he has a tendency to listen to those. But Paul does give his warning, and they go on. So, but of course, Fair Havens wasn't suitable to winter in, and so their objective was to go to Phoenix, which had a more favorable facing port, and they were hoping to winter there, but the winds did not allow them to do that either. And so I think a northeasterner came up and started pushing them out into the sea. And it talks about, in verse 18, exceedingly tempest tossed, and then they lighten the ship. Verse 20, neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, and no small tempest beat upon it. So get your mind, what is the situation that Paul's in? He's on this ship as a prisoner, but they're in a hurricane, if you want to put it that way, and go for days and days without the sun nor seeing the stars. And so 276 people on board, and you can imagine some of the thoughts that were going through their minds as they are going through this time. I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part. Yeah. And the ship's not as big as this room, so pretty crammed in there. We know that there were sailors and soldiers, probably some seasickness, it was a challenging time. And then we're going to get over to tonight, but think about this. They're in this midst. They're going to go 14 days and just terrible, terrible weather. And in verse 21 of chapter 27, Paul stands up. But after long absence from food, then Paul stood in the midst of them and said, "Men, you should have listened to me and not have sailed from Crete and incurred this disaster and loss. And now I urge you to take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship. For there stood by me this night an angel of the God to whom I belong and whom I serve, saying, 'Do not be afraid, Paul, you must be brought before Caesar, and indeed God has granted you all those who sail with you. Therefore, take heart, men, for I believe God that it will be just as it was told me. However, we must run aground on a certain island.'" And so Paul gives this account of the Lord standing by him again, right? We talked a little bit about it when he was back in Jerusalem, how the Lord stood by him and encouraged him. And now again, in the midst of this 14 days in some point in time, the scripture says it, all hope was lost, but yet the Lord stood by Paul. So just from an encouragement standpoint of this disaster, really, that Paul is going through, and yet he gets encouragement from the Lord that he's with him. Right, so we can learn from that, right? We may think that we're going through a shipwreck in our life, and we need to understand that if we're faithful to God, God is going to be standing there with us. Just like Paul was encouraged by that, we can be encouraged because God is trustworthy, and he tells us that he would never leave us. He goes on, it talks about the 14th night. They were driven up and down. Another one of those. They're still just randomly, just wherever the wind is taking them, they're just with that. No control really of the ship at all. And then they realize that they're coming closer to land. They put down some anchors. The sailors are wanting to get away. And what does Paul say? Paul 31, "Unless to the centurion and the soldiers, unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved." They started listening to Paul, didn't they? So the soldiers wanted to be saved, so they go and they cut the ropes to the skiff so the sailors couldn't get away. So now things are starting to change for Paul from that standpoint. And so Paul encourages them to take food. 14 days since they've eaten. And so although the Lord has promised Paul that he's going to get to Rome and that he stood by them and you're going to be before Caesar, Paul still understands that he has a responsibility. He's going to nourish himself, and he encourages the others to nourish themselves, for it's for your own safety, right? It's for your own saving your own lives. And what does he do at this point in time. Still stormy. Still the storm's going on. He's saying, we haven't eaten in 14 days. We need to eat. And what does he do? He gives thanks. What in the world has Paul got to be thankful for in the situation that he's in? Everything. That's what he has to be thankful for. And we have to remember that. You know, we deal with things in our life, and everybody handles it differently. At some point in time, we're going to feel that we're in the midst of a shipwreck. And we need to stop. And we need to give thanks to God for everything he's done in our life. That's hard. It's hard. But Paul did it. And we can learn from Paul. And you know what that did to the others that were watching Paul? That was an example from Paul. And what did they do? They took courage from his courage. Do we show courage to other people so that they can have courage from us? Man, so many lessons. I told you at the beginning, I learned a lot last quarter, and I'm still learning, and it still is just impactful to me, the lessons that we can learn from the attitude of Paul. So I just want to encourage everybody to continue to look at that and to see him as that example. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and I think that it is an example for us, right? That let's don't be ashamed of the gospel of Christ, and let's give God glory every time that we can. But I want to go back to a statement here. Yes, sir. Yeah, and we're going to see some, we'll go over the term barbarians, but we're going to see some barbarians show kindness here, right? So there's a lot of lessons that we can learn while we're going through this. But I want to go back to, just for a moment, this last statement here. However, we must run aground on a certain island. So this is a Google Maps picture of the area. So this is Crete down here, if I can get there. And Malta's covered up here, so this is another picture. There's a lot of blue. Of course, with the projector, it doesn't look that blue, but it's supposed to be blue. There's a lot of blue between Sicily and Africa, and the ship is going up and down, up and down, up and down. How in the world did they end up at this island? God is in control, right? In the midst of these 14 days, he's saying, yes, God stood by me, but we're going to have to run aground on an island. At the 14th day, they start hearing, and they put the anchors down, and the next morning, they see land. That is God's providence right there. Let's don't forget that. Possibility. All right, anyway, I enjoyed this picture and just kind of wanted to think about where Paul is, where the ship is, what's happening, everything. And when you do the math or whatever, there's about a 5% chance that they're going to end up where they ended up. And God is in control. God can hit that 5% every single time. And let's don't forget it. All right, let's get into our lesson tonight. Chapter 28, they know that they're at Malta. And when they had escaped, they found that the island was called Malta. And then the natives, I'm going to read the King James Version. When they had escaped, they knew that the island was called Malta, and the barbarous people showed us no little kindness. Now, the New King James has natives, and I think the other ones. But if you turn over to Romans, it's just one page over for me, Romans chapter 1 and verse 14. I am a debtor, here's Paul writing, I'm a debtor both to Greeks and to the barbarians. All right, so when you see this term barbarians, it's not what we typically think it is. It's anything that's non-Greek, All right, so when you see that in Romans chapter 14, he's not saying that these people are out murdering people or whatever, which is kind of the term or the way we define that term. And so these people, they're non-Greek people, and they end up on this island. It's raining, it's cold. Do they have to help these people? They don't. But Paul says they showed exceeding kindness. Man, isn't that a lesson for us? You know, when people show up at our house unknowingly and things are not going well for them, are we upset because it's 2 a.m. in the morning? Well, I hope not. All right, let's show kindness. These people show kindness to Paul. Let's show kindness. They kindled a fire, made us welcome because the rain and the cold was falling. And then what happens? So Paul, being probably not told, but I can just imagine Paul going, hey, I'll get some sticks. You don't have to tell me. I'm going to help out. I'm going to get some sticks. And go. Paul's gathering some sticks to get a fire. He throws them into the fire. And what happens? It says this viper, the snake, comes out because of the heat, and it latches onto him. Now, a couple of the commentators did it bite him or not? It says because of the latching, the way the word is, it could be they just wrapped around him. I feel it's biting because the people were going to be watching whether he's going to swell up and die. So if they're just wrapping around him, I don't think that is, because Paul shakes it off into the fire. And what do they go? Ooh, man, he must be a murderer. Why did they say a murderer? Well, because in their reference to gods and all of that sort of stuff, typically they believe that the justice came down and it was always where you would get justice as to what your offense was. And so murder typically with the hands, so therefore the viper hitting the hands, automatically, oh, he must have been a murderer. And justice, who is basically a god, right? They determine the vengeance that they're going to have upon him. And so this justice, yep, he's going to get justice because he's escaped the storm, but he hasn't escaped the vengeance from the justice, right? And so they just sit back. They go, oh, this is going to be exciting. This guy's going to swell up. He's going to be frothing at the mouth, and he's going to get his due reward. And they sit back and they watch, and nothing happens. And all of a sudden, their attitude changes. He's not a murderer. He's a god. Wow, isn't it amazing how our minds create these stories, right? Remember back in, let me get my notes here, sorry. I forgot which, I think it was Acts chapter 14. You know, they thought that they were gods come down, and then what do they do a little bit later? They're stoning them. It's amazing. Amazing how we can change our perspectives about people. And yet, these people that showed kindness, they recognized that Paul was somewhat unique. Verse 6, however, they were expecting that he would swell up or suddenly fall down, and after they had looked for a long time, saw no harm to him, they changed their minds and said that he was a god. And so I just kind of sit there and think about it, and they're all, you know, they're all kind of over here whispering, oh, he's going to die, he's going to die, he's going to die. He didn't die. He's a god, he's a god. You know, just kind of put your mindset of where they were. It says in that region, verse 7, was an estate of the leading citizen of the land whose name was Publius, who received us and entertained us courteously for 3 days. And so here's this magistrate, this governor of the island or whatever. He's showing kindness too. He's receiving them. And he's helping them in their time of need. And it just so happens that his father was laying sick of a fever and dysentery. This dysentery, that's an gastro issue that's not very, not good. Tracy and I dealt with it a little bit while we were coming back from Africa. Not a good feeling or whatever. And it says that Paul went into him and prayed, and he laid his hands on him and healed him. And so here is Paul, a prisoner, demonstrating that the power of God isn't a prisoner. He is able to continue to show the power of God through miracles. And he wants to share it. You know, Jesus, when he sent out the 12, use these things. Heal these people. Raise the dead. Demonstrate the power of God. And so we see here Paul, an opportunity comes up, and he heals this person. Well, of course, news gets out, And what happens? Hey, I've got some sick. I want to come and I want to. And so what does Paul do? Nope, can't do that. Done my one. I'm done. No, he heals these people. And what do you think? Now, we're not told, so I'm got to be careful here. But what do you think Paul talked about while these people were coming in and Paul was demonstrating the power of God? Do you think Paul was talking about everything that he was doing? I give God the glory, right? And so he's preaching about the kingdom. Be careful. We're not told that. But knowing Paul, knowing his background, knowing his stance when he's able to talk to people, I can only imagine every time somebody comes in, let me tell you about Jesus. Let me tell you about this God who is allowing me to heal you. Let me tell you about them. The excitement that Paul has in sharing the gospel. We can learn from that, brother. We need to learn from that. I need to learn from that. Gospel is the power of God for salvation. Are we sharing it with people the way that we need to be? So when this was done, the rest of those, verse 9, on the island who had diseases also came and were healed. And they also honored us in many ways. And when we departed, they provided such things as were necessary. And so we're going to see in the next verse, they were there for 3 months. And so Paul had plenty of opportunity to share the gospel. We're not really told of any that were converted or anything like that. But I know that when Paul left, knowing Paul and knowing how he operates, every opportunity that he had, he was sharing the gospel. And so there were people there that understood what the salvation of Jesus meant. Whether they did anything about it, we're going to leave that in God's hands because we're not told. But I have full confidence that when Paul left, that people knew about Jesus because that's what he wanted. That was who he was. Let me tell you about Jesus. Are we that way? Are we willing to talk to people about Jesus? I need to get better. And I just hope and pray we all can get better, that we're not ashamed about talking about the blessings that we have through Jesus. Any questions? All right. So after 3 months, we sailed on an Alexandrian ship, another ship that had wintered at this island, this figurehead with the twin brothers, this a god head that the sons of, anyway, if you read into mythology and all of that, just a figurehead on the ships. They were, the sailors believed that it brought them some guidance, some protection or whatever. And Paul got on the ship. So even though they had these heads of these gods on there, he got on the ship. Of course, he was a prisoner, didn't have much of a choice. And he landed at Syracuse, and we stayed there 3 days. Syracuse was a huge city, largest city in Sicily, at 22 miles in diameter. So a huge city at the time that Paul went through there. From there, we circled around and reached Rhegium. And after 1 day, the south blew. The next day, we came to Puteoli. And so this area here, Rhegium, the Strait of Messina, it's between the toe of Italy and the island of Sicily. And so there that's where Paul went through. You know, so if you go there today, that's where Paul went through. And so they were staying there. And then they wouldn't get to Puteoli up here. Sorry. All right. I've done something. We're gonna move on. They began to carry on to their trip over land. And it says in verse 14, we found brethren and were invited to stay with them 7 days. And so we went toward Rome. So when they found got to Puteoli, of course, they found brethren, which would have been an encouragement. And we're going to see in just a moment when the brethren from Rome come down, it really encourages Rome. And from there, when the brethren heard about us, so apparently there were people running ahead who knew about Paul, and they were letting the brethren at Rome, Paul's on his way, he's landed at Puteoli. And so they come down to meet him. And they come down to this forum of Appius and even some down to three taverns. And when you look into that, that was about a day outside of Rome. And it was a kind of a built-up area at the time, kind of a traveler, a rest area. And so a couple of the commentators, you know, why did some of them go on to the Forum of Appius, and others stayed at three taverns. Actually, the Romans, this was the Appia Way, which is a major road between Rome and going down into Italy. And they're very swampy at that. And so the Romans had built a canal, and they were using it, pulling horses and stuff to take trade up. So you could get in the canal, ride up on a barge, or walk on the road. And so some of the commentators believe that they didn't know which way Paul was going to come. And so some went on down to the Forum of Appius, and some stayed at the three taverns. Doesn't really matter. I just like reading about that stuff and sharing it with you. But what does it say? It says, when Paul saw them, he thanked God and took courage. Paul's been traveling for years. He's been in custody for 4 years. And he's written this letter 5 years ago. And he's finally being able to see the brethren that he wrote to. And I can only imagine the emotions that went through Paul. And it gave him encouragement. You know, when we're able to travel and we go to places, and it's been talked about before, the bond that we have as children of God, wherever we go, when we gather in the assembly, there's a bond that we have because we are children of God. And I think that Paul recognized that bond as he came closer and closer to Rome. It says, and when we came to Rome, verse 16, the centurion delivered the prisoner to the captain of the guard, but Paul was permitted to dwell by himself with the soldier who guarded him. So here again, the situation where Paul had, I guess we could go into multiple different things. He being a Roman citizen, different things like that. I truly believe it's because of his character that he had built this trust. And they get to Rome and they go, okay, here are the prisoners, but this one we're going to set aside into a house. Why? You ever ask? Well, I don't know. The Bible doesn't tell us that. But I think learning more and more about Paul, Paul is overflowing with the fruit of the Spirit. And I think that the centurions see that, and they recognize that, and they trust Paul. But he's still got a guard. Yeah, and that had to help, right? Hey, he saved my life. We're going to treat him right. Yeah, I didn't think about that. Yeah, well, and I thought about that. You know, maybe the people running, and there again, I don't want to be careful that I'm not adding. Maybe the people running ahead were the ones that he had saved. Or maybe some from Malta who he had healed even. Right? Can you imagine them running? Paul is here. Paul's coming. And listen what he did to me. Just amazing. Just
even though they didn't have CNN back then, I'm sure they
did. Yeah. Well, they were because the people came to him, so there was a way of seeing that. All right. Any questions before we move on? All right, verse 17, and it came to pass after 3 days that Paul called the leaders excuse me, of the Jews together. So when they had come together, he said to them, men and brethren, though I have done nothing against our people or the customs of our fathers, yet I was delivered as a prisoner from Jerusalem into the hands of the Romans, who when they had examined me wanted to let me go because there was no cause for putting me to death. But when the Jews spoke against it, I was compelled to appeal to Caesar. Not that I had anything of which to accuse my nation. For this reason, therefore, I have called you to see you and speak to you, because for the hope of Israel I am bound with this chain. And so it seems to me that Paul wasn't aware of what information had come before him. And so he wanted to call the leaders and really explain himself why he was here, why he was sent here. but it does seem to indicate that he's in chains, all right? So he's got this guard with him, and I'm assuming that any time that people are around or whatever, he's being chained. So he's still a prisoner at this time. And so he's wanting to share with them, hey, whatever you may have heard, I want to explain what happened. And what do the people say? Oh, we hadn't heard anything. The people that have accused you, they haven't come up here. Nobody's written anything. So it's kind of interesting to me that all of this hassle that the high priests and the elders and everything, and they were wanting him dead and all that. And I think they've just kind of thrown in the towel. Well, you know what? We didn't get it done in Caesarea. We didn't get it done in Jerusalem. How in the world are we going to get it done in Rome? And so, no, they've already gone and explained to the high priest why they're not bound to that. Okay, so, but it seems like they didn't even send a letter or anything, because the Jews say no, we haven't heard anything. I'm sorry. Go ahead. That's a possibility. We don't know what Festus wrote, right? But Festus did say that there's really nothing to charge him against. So I don't want to add anything to it. But if someone had sent a letter with someone else from the high priest standpoint, that would have had some different verbiage in it. But there was nothing there, right? So whether God took care of that or not, they haven't heard anything. Verse 21, we neither received letters from Judea concerning you, nor of any of the brethren who came, reported, or spoken any evil of you. But they have a desire. So they've heard of this sect. They've heard of this way. There's Christians in Rome, I'm sure, discussions. But we desire to hear from you what you think. For concerning this sect, we know that it is spoken against everywhere. Wow. That's kind of an opening for Paul, isn't it? Yeah, we want to hear a little bit more about this sect called the Way. And Paul's like, yes, another opportunity for me, right? And so he calls them together. They appointed him a day. Of course, he was under arrest, so they had to make arrangements for that. So as they came to his lodging, and to whom he explained and solemnly testified of the kingdom of God, persuading them concerning Jesus from both the law of Moses and the prophets from morning till evening. How important was this for Paul to talk to them? I'll give you 20 minutes of my time. No, well, Paul being a prisoner, he didn't have a whole lot of things other to do, but he spoke to them from morning till evening. I'm sorry? Oh yeah, yeah. Well, and God told him, "Hey, you're gonna be preaching in Rome. Here's my opportunity." Didn't realize I was gonna be in chains. Didn't realize I was gonna be under house arrest. But man, whatever opportunity God gives me, I'm gonna do it. Another lesson for us: whatever opportunity God presents to us to speak about Jesus, let's take that opportunity. And of course, even when we talk to people that we come into contact with who may have different views or us, sometimes they may be interested and they may want to listen. But a lot of times what happens? Nope, that's not for me. Same thing here. They listen to it. Some of them are persuaded. Some of them go, nah, I don't think so. And then it says, so when they did not agree among themselves, they departed after Paul had said one word. That always, every time I read that, he says more than one word, right? But anyway, so it's kind of like he says his last statement. And he quotes from Isaiah. Go to this people. Let me go back up. Let me start where he's... The Holy Spirit spoke rightly through Isaiah the prophet to our father, saying, go to this people and say, hearing you will hear and shall not understand, and seeing you will see and not perceive. For the hearts of this people have grown dull. Their ears are hard of hearing and their eyes have closed, lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears, lest they should understand with their hearts and turn, so that I should heal them. He's going back to the prophets. Here's these leaders of the Jews. They understand the prophets. They understand the law. Paul is quoting from him. He's telling them about Jesus who's coming down and what they're going to do. They're going to close their eyes. They're going to close their ears. And Paul says, this is what you've done. And some of them are persuaded and some of them are not. Same thing today. We just have to keep preaching. That's all we can do. Just spread the seed, share the word. Therefore, let it be known to you that the salvation of God has been sent to the Gentiles, and they will hear it. And when he had said these words, the Jews departed and had great dispute among themselves. And it says, then Paul dwelt 2 whole years in his own rented house and received all who came to him, preaching the kingdom of God and teaching the things which concern the Lord Jesus Christ with all confidence, no one forbidding him. And so here it is. He's in Rome. And God says, you're gonna proclaim my word in Rome. And he's there for 2 years in this house arrest. And what does he do? That's what he's doing. He's proclaiming God's word. Amazing. All right. Now we have come to the end of Acts. And so on Sunday, I'll be teaching 2 more classes. And we're going to go into what happens kind of after Acts. We're going to pull from some historical accounts. But I decided, instead of going through a review of what we have, we're going to go through Paul's letters. We're going to go through his prison epistles. We're going to summarize it. But it helped me to remember the things that Paul's been through in the last few years of his life. Now he's at house arrest and he has an opportunity to write. And so I thought it would be good if we just kind of do a summary of some of these letters that he wrote to the brethren. So the next 2 classes, we'll kind of take a look at that. So next, on Sunday morning, we'll kind of take a look at some of the things that are going on from a historical standpoint, where we can get some information, and then we'll go into some of the prison epistles. So thank you very much for your attention. Appreciate it. Yes? Yep. Okay.